The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good morning and welcome back to Freedom 106.5 FM. On the line with me this morning, as promised, we have retired. Let me just give you that in accolades. We have retired Lieutenant Roman Dindial. Good morning to you, Norman. I missed you yesterday. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning. How about that now?
All right, I'm getting you now. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Right, thank you.
We missed each other by a hairpin yesterday.
but we are
here this morning, and you know, we don't have much time, so let's quickly get into our discussions as it relates to some of the things unfolding with the state of emergency currently overshadowing Trinidad and Tobago. First and foremost, to start things off, I want to ask you how effective, in your professional capacity, do you think the SOE is, and whether or not it's actually working?
So I've commented on this a lot before, and in my professional capacity, I would tell you, and I have to reiterate, the SOE is not working. We have an SOE that is a failed SOE. So you have things that have not been used in this SOE SOE is not supposed to be something to be used as a recurring decimal. It is the last bastion that a state or any government would like to use in order to curb a certain situation that you can't get a hold of. And you put things in place that are hard hitting, and that's why you give the military extraordinary powers and also to help the state. And you bring those things back to normalcy as quick as you can, and then hand it back over to the law enforcement, normal law enforcement, your policing. Because when you go to a state of emergency, you have already told the public, you have told the world, listen, the normal things that you have going in Trinidad and Tobago, the normal policing powers that you have, it's not working, it's not handling the crime situation. So that's why you need these extraordinary powers. But you can't be using extraordinary powers all the time. Well, and you have seen this with one of the articles by the IHCR, that they are cribbing countries like Belize, Jamaica, and Trinidad and Tobago for using SOEs over and over, and they are actually, because limiting the human rights for the people of a country. So you're limiting that, and your states can't be doing that all the way. So it shows you that you are failing in actually utilizing an SOE to bring about the change that you think that you can. Now, we have other individuals who will argue that, listen, the numbers and the figures are going down. And I will propose this to those individuals. Just like when we had another commissioner of police that was working during a pandemic, and we said that, you know, because his numbers went down because of the pandemic, you can use the same argument because you have those restrictions, those sorts of things that you have, the numbers are going down. But what you are actually seeing right now, the numbers are going back up. We have these brazen murders that are taking place during the daylight, where you have the criminal elements that are no longer afraid or no longer said that this SOE has a punch. So they are moving with impunity. So they recognize that the state has failed. They recognize that the police themselves were not able to do their job normally. They recognize that the police are still not able to do their job with the extraordinary powers that they have. So they're coming out, and the police always were not being able to get evidence, to charge individuals, to solve murders, to solve crimes. So we're seeing it still happening again, and we're in a problem right now where the criminal elements has recognized and they have got immunity. State of emergency is a failed state of emergency.
We have former police service commission Clive Dutton, Pastor Clive Dutton, saying, while the fear of crime and violence in some communities is a major concern, the decline in the murder toll should not be dismissed. With that being said, he made a statement. He said, imagine if we didn't have a state of emergency, the murder rate might have skyrocketed beyond what we are and beyond where we were last year. Do you believe that statement to be true and factual?
So I will tell Mr. Dutton, the thing is that we're not debating figures and numbers and statistics. If you have one murder too much, one murder more, right, it is too much. because the whole thing about the state of emergency was to stop that. It wasn't to bring it down. You know, you have reached up, because in every country you have crime. You have crime and you have things that are going on, but the police service was not doing their job. So actually saying that you're trying to have a state of emergency to bring this down and you're using figures is disingenuous. Because what you really need to do, you really need to stop crime. And you're seeing it's not working. So you're telling me that it's going down, but you're seeing more and more violent crime happening. So in other words, Mr. Duffing is saying that he would like to live in a perpetual state of emergency. That can't happen. You cannot be taking away citizens' rights, right? Your human rights, your democratic rights, your rights. People don't understand, you know, a lot of people don't understand what a state of emergency is, because they find it, because the state of emergency has not been, as you said, we don't have a curfew, we don't have certain restrictions, and the criminals themselves recognize that. However, the underlying thing about the state of emergency is what we're going to go to the crux of the matter, where a political entity, the minister, can sign a PDO, a preventative detention order for any person. You and I have no rights during the state of emergency. You know, they can come into your house, they can come into your, without a search warrant, just on suspicion. And they can keep hundreds of citizens under a detention order, taking away their rights to liberty and freedom under a preventative detention order. And this is where it's going. So people and citizens, see, until it starts to hit home, until it affects these individuals themselves, then they will understand the amount of freedoms they have actually given up by having this state of emergency and this order put in place. And how, it's not doing anything.
How long can a government continue to treat with the state of emergency like a recurring decimal, as you mentioned a few moments ago, and extended constitutionally? When does it end, and how much time or leeway, if you do know when it ends, before they can actually go back to Parliament to reinstate another one?
Well, as you see, that's out there. That's open source information that you know. And then you recognize, you have to go back to Parliament after the 30 days. So what has happened is that constitutionally we have those limits in our constitution, where you proclaim it, you have your first 16 days, and then after that you go back simple majority, and then when you extend it for 30 days. But that's the loophole the government in Trinidad and Tobago is exploiting, where once you break the state of emergency and you break it within, you give them 2 weeks, then you can go back again and declare another state emergency. So they're framing it. They're using the loopholes within the laws of Trinidad and Tobago to do things that you're not supposed to do. It wasn't done like that in the essence of the law. The reason our lawmakers and our constitutional guardians and custodians at the end, when they did this law, they knew the essence of the law and they knew exactly how a state of emergency would affect the individuals in Trinidad and Tobago and affects the citizenry. That is why they put it for a specific short amount of time. You're supposed to be able to return the country back into a state of normalcy when you go to a state of emergency in a very short amount of time. But the loopholes that are in the law is what the government is using right now and going back, breaking it, and then going back. So you have things in our constitution, in law, that are bad laws. And you have the law association in Trinidad and Tobago right now coming and saying, you know, listen, the citizens should not be critical or overly critical. They need to be responsible when they're criticizing the law association or criticizing the appellates. Now, nobody's criticizing the judges themselves, you know. Nobody's criticizing each and individual job. What people need to speak out about is the judgments that are made. And these are the things that have citizens or keep citizens their rights, because you are the ones who will be able to speak out of bad laws. You know that bad laws are made. And while society evolves, these are the kind of pressures that allow us to change the laws in Parliament and have bad laws amended into good laws. Because the law is the law, doesn't mean that it's necessarily right, you know. And we have seen that way, way back in history, where we have had laws, we still have archaic laws on our books, we still have bicycle laws that is this folio, we have sedition laws, we have laws riding a bicycle. If you don't have a license on a bicycle, they could charge you. And we have laws that start speaking up. And these are all colonial laws that we adopted from our colonial masters in order to keep us oppressed. So,
Respectfully, I think your guest making no sense at all. If your guest is saying that one murder is too much, and the statistics show that we have 260 something less murders than last year, how can you not say that that's an improvement? regardless of the method used. Maybe the SOE is not the best method in the world. Maybe it's not the only solution we can look at. Maybe we have to look at other things. But until you find a solution, if this is bringing down the murder rate, then it works. Why change it?
You make, and I'll ask you're totally missing the point, sir. You're missing the point, sir. Right? The SOE is not to bring down murders. You're supposed to see what the SOE is supposed to be able to get. You're talking about SOE is something that you give extrajudicial powers, as it was for murders. You know, if you understand why the government could place the SOE, because murders and stuff is doing normal law enforcement. When you have law enforcement and can do their job normally, that's what you have the police for. When you understand you're going to SOE, you're going to SEC for terrorism. You understand when you had the minister saying that they're looking for murders for high-ranking officials, plots against the state. Those are the things that SOE is for. If you figure that the SOE is for murders, then you're living in the wrong place. You need to go and live somewhere where you want to live in a perpetual SOE. That's in China, tell you.
Hello, good morning. Respectfully, please.
Whose freedom of speech have they taken away, sir? Whose freedom of movement have they taken away? Not those who play in the fool? You still have the freedom. You can still go to church. You can still go to school. You can still go to the grocery. So what is your problem? I support a further state of emergency again.
All right. The thing about it is, I was getting to that point, and that caller raised the issue. We're talking about suspension of rights. You mentioned that unless it reached home, we wouldn't understand how our rights have been infringed upon. Based on the intel, based on investigation, based on what we're seeing in the public's domain, we can't see nothing hidden. They are claiming that there's intelligence where persons have gathered themselves together and they have conspired against officials, high-ranking officials and other persons in order to disrupt the peace of law-abiding citizens. So to prevent these, and they say they have gathered intelligence as such. Now, the PDOs is just that, to prevent you from carrying out an activity. My thing about, we do not have sufficient evidence to take you before the courts with a charge of conspiracy, because you have not conspired. You have uttered statements on social media. You have laid threats. You have also called on the attention of external individuals and pointed as to where they should launch attacks. And you have been held. There were two persons actually charged and, you know, released and faced convictions and stuff. But there were others currently being held on PDOs of alleged intel of conspiracy. Have this government opened up a Pandora's box that if and when this state of emergency does come to an end for the 33 days, these said individuals can now take the state to task and then cost taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars, even in the millions, to pay for unlawful detention. Are these PDOs something lawful in the sense that there's no retribution to come, or they hold you now and they could face the consequences before the courts later on, Dindial?
Well, you've seen that is happening. We are still waiting on the 2011 judgment, which is going to happen soon, of that last state of emergency. We have individuals that have won their case already, and they're waiting on how much damages they're going to receive. You also had, one of them actually was, I think, if my memory is right, on one of the articles, one of them was a very senior police officer that was held on a PDO without being charged. The newspapers took the article, and he and a lot of individuals, they won that case, and the state has to pay his lawyer's fees, and the state has to pay him for recompensation for loss of earnings and character and all of that. So we're waiting on the others that had happened in 2011, and we're seeing what the judgment is and the precedents will be set. So obviously, once the case law has been set and the precedents has been set, definitely the other individuals right now that are being held right now will, as we see in local parlance, trump and follow suit. The sad thing about it is that the individuals that have signed these orders and the people that are following them the fundings will not come from them.
Exactly.
Whatever the court orders, yes. It will come from the
I'm just
come from
calling
the
you to thank your guest. I want to say that he has hit the nail right on the head, and I just want to say that. That's all.
He hit the nail on the head. The thing about it is, we can dialogue all day on this SOE. And whether or not it's bringing or bearing any fruits at all with respect to what it's doing. telling me that you have 7 murders less than last year, does that state that the SOE is actually working? Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Daisy. Quickly. You know, I'm hearing that the SOE, because it's breaking down the murder rate and so on, it's working and it should be kept. But Sharia law will bring it down much more. Should we then go with that? And then we have the issue of the bail. Now, the bail would have kept some of these people in prison according to law, but it was denied because the current prime minister was saying it was denying people their rights. But how much more rights are being denied? No, you can't even protest 500 meters away from certain places. And then we are now on the international scene with respect to using this state of emergency for what it's not supposed to be used for. And before I go, I want to ask one question of your guest. PDO, and normal arrest. Why is it that some people are arrested and charged and some people for the same crime are put on PDOs? And why is it that PDOs are detainees seem to have less rights than the normally arrested and arrested people?
I realize there's a difference. Do you understand the difference? Hello, Norman?
Oh, you're asking me? I thought you were asking Nicola. Nicola is quite correct. Nicola is quite correct recognizing and seeing what is happening. And we are on the international market, the global. Everybody's looking at us now. You're looking at Trinidad and Tobago, where Trinidad and Tobago is heading. We have, and that has happened even before that. The eyes were looking at us, red flags were showing up, where people are saying, you know, Trinidad and Tobago is a vassal state, especially when we came up, right? We came up with a narrative that we brought a radar into Trinidad and Tobago to help fight crime. We brought a radar because of the SOE. We bring a radar to look for guns and it was shown the radar can't go and see through no mountain. The radar can't go and see nothing. The radar had everything to do with the attack and in Venezuela and the kidnapping of Maduro. Whether you like him or not, we know that. And we helped the U.S. in that. So we were seeing, everybody was seeing that Trinidad and Tobago was like a vassal state. We are doing everything that the Trump administration requires. So you're seeing what is happening. We started way, way back. So we started with false narratives, you know. We started with false narratives. You said, then you said the radar woke, and then all of a sudden the radar gone, and we're still in a SOE. So, you know, all these people trying to justify the SOE and justify that, and I'm going all the way up from the top. The narrative to justify this SOE, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. What you're supposed to be doing for this SOE, you're supposed to be giving the police back their powers and allowing the police to do their jobs. Let the police see. So you see, if you want to bring in people to help Trinidad and Tobago, where the police is feeling. The police is feeling in gathering evidence. The police is feeling in and actually finding the people. So you need to know, listen, this is where you need to bring in. So if we follow the Westminster style of governance and our judicial system follows that, or highest court is the Privy Council, we know, we use those guys across there to help us. So tell us, listen, this is what your investigative techniques need to be like. This is what your cold case scenarios need to be like. This is what you need to do in the judiciary. Unclog the judiciary. Make sure you get the people to the courts. Where are you holding people? Let's just see. Let's assume for a second that they have information, because they don't have evidence to charge, of these 400 plus people that they have under the preventative detention order. What are they doing? Is my taxpayers' money and your taxpayers' money? If these people are in fact guilty, right? They are there by the state. They're not being charged. They're not being held accountable. They're not paying for the crime. So in other words, they're there by the state holding them. They get an vacation. They're on a vacation. And I'm just assuming if they are guilty, because after you're going to let them go, they haven't been
that
charged.
That is the type of vacation. I will. I don't mean to cut you, but that's one vacation I don't want. I'd work hard every day. You see that kind of vacation? No.
Well, you have them there. But here's the thing: I don't want a vacation also. But at the end of the day, they got away free. Is there any for their crime? You do the crime, but you're not serving any time. You're not being punished. There's no penalty for doing it. So you telling me that someone in Trinidad and Tobago could plot to murder or plot some conspiracy against high officials, and you have all this intelligence apparatus for the whole state, and you can't find any of them yet and put any evidence, but you could find when a minister phone gone missing. You could find when somebody beer get stolen on the block. All of a sudden, you could. Yeah. So you see, I'm not about administrations, you know. I'm about the people and the government and the institution doing what they're supposed to do. Because this sort of dereliction of duty has crossed all administrations.
And my final thought to you, in conclusion, this SOE, in your respective learned opinion, is not serving a good purpose. You mentioned certain apparatus of the SOE is missing. Could you just, within a minute, under a minute, tell me what are some of these things that governs an SOE that you think the government did not employ?
So I was involved in the SOEs because you know I'm a retired officer.
Yes.
I was involved in myself in that first SOE in 2011 under the then Kamala Prasad administration. And under that SO, when the military was giving extraordinary powers in order to, so it acts as a force multiplier. What it does, it gives the military a certain amount of police powers, like police. They can't investigate. But what it is, as you said, to bring down that sort of, you know, the hammer. You're coming with force. You're coming to do something that disrupts the criminal elements and disrupts them in such a way that it dismantles them. That disruption has a dismantling effect throughout the organization. So one of the critical things, and people may say, listen, here's what Mr. Didier, you know, we're in this, we're so and so, and it's not disrupting anybody because we have freedom. One of the things that is critical in an SOE is, you see, that freedom of movement, the curfew aspect, is very, very critical and important because it gives you that hard thing. You curb the, you can now funnel them into certain areas, the elements that you're looking for, and you go after them. But before you even reach the SOE, sir, you were supposed to have all the intelligence, right? All the information that you gathered and you placed it into an intelligent format. So when you go into the SOE, you're doing in targeted operations. And you're doing those targeted operations against those targeted groups. I am hearing all the time that we know how many gangs it has. Then we hear the UK has one set of numbers. Then we hear our minister saying a different set of numbers. So you don't know where it's going. You don't know where the information is. If the information is credible, we're moving back and forth. We're holding people in preventative detention orders. And we're not seeing any sort of targeted operations that are taking place that are really supposed to restabilize the country, bring the country back to where we need. And we need to do it quickly. It's not about politics. It is about our institutions doing their job properly and giving them the tools to do it. And they say they have the tools because we have the minister saying that he has all the intelligence gathering tools and he has it at his ability. All right. It is how you use it. So I just want to give, and I just want to give you one more add. The tone of any institution is set by the leader, set by the head. If you have a leader that doesn't know what he's doing, right? And anybody following what you expect, they're going to follow the people, they just follow the tone. So you have an institution, we are talking about national security, homeland security. If the leader doesn't know and needs help, people need to give him help. Or the prime minister herself needs to remove him.
All right.
And put somebody competent to do the job, sir.
I would leave it there. I thank you very much, Norman Dindial, retired colonel, for coming through. I believe a part two is necessary, and we would look into the not-too-distant future to bring you back. With that being said, have a safe and productive one, and we'd look to future conversations with you. Have a good one, sir. And that concludes the Morning Rumble.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.